We would see certainly with the constitution that would follow in 2 years. But already by October of 1789, Louis the 16th had tired of the situation. He called for royal troops to Versailles, where the assembly was deliberating, and on October 5th, 1789, a crowd of angry women gathered in Paris at the city hall to protest food shortages. It was not uncommon for women to lead protests over food, particularly the availability of grain, of bread. They were responsible for fending for their families, finding food. "We want bread, we want bread," the crowd of women shouted at the Hotel de Ville. They marched all the way from the center of Paris to Versailles, gathering strength as they progressed. I think in many of the, must have been extraordinary scenes of this revolutionary year, this procession of angry women marching along the road from Paris out to Versailles. As they went along, men joined, people with weapons joined. At a certain point, somewhere along the way, they managed to find cannon. So they were dragging heavy cannons on their way out to Versailles to confront the royal family, to confront the king, to demand bread. Members of the National Guard joined the procession, and the royal family, confronted with this throng, if one stands in that in the royal chamber at Versailles and looks out through that enormous promenade and that great vista looking out of those windows where Louis the 16th and his wife Marie Antoinette must have seen the advancing crowd, it must have been quite an extraordinary scene of this throng of women and men marching on their way. The royal family, there was some violence associated with this. The royal family, however, agreed to return to Paris, escorted not by royal troops, but rather by the National Guard. And this was really quite extraordinary, since a number of the royal guards had been executed by the National Guard, and their heads had been chopped off and were on pikes that accompanied the royal family back into Paris. So this was not a very elevated procession heading back into the city. The royal family would take up residence at the Tuileries Palace, where it was to remain, in effect, a prisoner of the French people. The constitution that would be drafted was moderate, but its achievements were substantial. The Constitution of 1791, the product of this National Assembly, created a system of active and passive citizens based on, of all things, tax liability. Liability, not what one actually pays. I think that's an important distinction. But what this did was to actually enfranchise about two-thirds of all males in France. So it was a very, very substantial achievement. However, while two-thirds of the male population had been given the suffrage, the elections were to be indirect, so that popular elections would elect certain representatives who would then elect a final assembly. This was a reflection of concern about the mob, particularly in Paris. The Constitution created a system of checks and balances, a la Montesquieu, between the legislature and the king, in which the legislature could override vetoes by the monarch. The Constitution also called for a rationalization of the French administration. France was now to be divided into 83 départements, then arrondissements, and then cantons, and then finally communes. It is a rational organization of the country. This was to apply to all of the areas of France. There would be no more regional privileges. One of the aspects of the old regime was that although the crown obviously had representatives in all parts of France, there were still regional privileges that were maintained. This was now no longer to be the case. This constitution of 1791, however, despite this rational organization, also envisioned a decentralized government in which there would be regional powers as well as that of the national government.